and entertaining as well. Please welcome Glennon Doyle Melton to the podium.
To have met Frankie today. She's fantastic. And I have been invited here today because of my blog community, my people at Monastery, and because of my book called Carry On Warrior and the nonprofit that has developed out of the blog. And if you have any questions about those things, I will answer them during the Q&A because I don't want to talk about any of that during my time. What I want to talk to you about is something that we all have very much in common. And the reason I know that we all have it in common is because I'm a writer and a thinker and a reader of stories. And I spend half of my day every day reading the stories of women. Because I tell my story openly on my blog and in my book, people tell me their stories. And so the greatest honor of my job is that for half a day every day, I sit at my computer and open beautiful emails from women all over the world. And because of that, I have a new awareness. I walk around the world seeing women not as I used to. I just see women as each one of you as the novel of triumph and tragedy and loss and great joy that you are. And so because of that, I am ridiculously honored to be here. And the one thing that I know from all of those letters and from my own personal experience is that no matter who we are, life is hard. And it is hard for women who work outside the home, and it is hard for women who stay home, and it is hard for women with children and without children, and women who are married, and women who are single, and women who are divorced, and healthy women, and sick women, and all of us. Life is hard, and that is okay, because like we say at Monastery, we can do hard things. And also because what I have found is that the hard parts of life are such a wonderful opportunity to allow those parts to help bring us together, to allow those parts to help us come together and talk about the hard, because the only thing that I have found that has consistently made life easier is talking about the hard stuff with other honest women. Because I think that we only have two options, and one is that we can be perfect alone, or we can be messy together. And messy together is better. It just is. And so today, I am going to talk to you about the five things that I have found through my own personal experience and from the lessons I've learned from other women that might make our lives, just our hard lives, just a little teeny bit easier. And the first one is this. I think that it would do us all a world of good if we would learn to identify who we are outside of the roles that we play, okay? And what I mean by that is that if you ask a woman who she is, she will immediately say, I am a wife, I am a mother, I am a teacher, I am a triathlete, I am, and then she will list what she does and who she serves. And that is the amazing thing about us, because our roles that we play are so incredibly sacred to us. But the problem is that they're actually not at our core who we are. And the way you can tell that is in those huge life changes where those roles change or fall apart and we don't know who we are anymore, like the empty nest, or when our husband, when it doesn't turn out to be what we thought it would be, or when we lose our health, or when our job goes away, right? And I will tell you that I learned this lesson the hard way. Because when I got sober, which was 11 years ago, I didn't know how to be a grown-up, so I became a grown-up by taking on roles, right? I was, for a lot of you seem new to Monastery, so you don't know my whole story. Kay, it's a doozy. But I was an addict. I'm a recovering everything. And so I found out that I was pregnant 11 years ago, and it seemed time to get some things together. So I got sober then, and at that time it seemed like maybe I should become a wife, because it was timely. And so I took on that role, and I did it pretty well. I just did it like, you know, you do in the beginning. Like, I felt like I was just kind of playing house, and I became what I thought was a good wife, and I had a good marriage, and I had babies, and I was this good mom. And then I became a writer, and, you know, the blog started taking off, and I'd had an eating disorder my whole life. So when I got sober, I was dedicated to learning how to be healthy, how to use food to nourish me instead of to kill me. And so I learned how to do that. So I became this like health person. And I just started adding these roles after roles, and it was so exciting. And then my book Carry On Warrior started doing really well, and then I got offered this dream job that I'd never even thought to dream of in my life. So that was all so awesome until one day. It was a normal day, as it always is. And my perfect marriage just crumbled in front of me. Didn't see it coming at all. After my perfect marriage crumbled, I thought, I might not be a wife anymore. My kids freaked out because, you know, that's what they do at those times. And then all of a sudden, I was looking down the barrel of this very different form of motherhood than I ever thought I'd have. And so that was different. And then all the stress from that made my chronic disease called Lyme come back. And so I couldn't be this health person anymore. I was stuck in bed. And then I lost the dream job. This is all like within a month, okay? And I never even started the dream job. They just called me and offered it to me, and then a month later they called me and took it away, okay? So that was like a new record even for me. And you guys, I woke up, and I remember actually waking up in the morning and feeling paralyzed in bed because I didn't know what to do. Because if I'm not a wife anymore, and I'm not this mother that I thought I was, and I can't write, and I can't do anything healthy, and I have no job, who am I? What do I even do? And because I had never taken the time to get to know myself, because I had to become a grown-up really fast when I started getting sober, I didn't know. So what I did was I decided to run away from home for a few days. So I told my kids that I had a writing assignment, and I told my husband I was running away from home. And I just felt myself drawn to this little hotel on the beach, right? And so I decided that anybody having a nervous breakdown at least deserved 24 hours of Bravo TV and chocolate and croissants. So I did that. I gave myself 24 hours of just complete self-indulgent self-pity. And then I decided I'm going to figure out something about me that can sustain me through this time. And I woke up the next morning, and I had left the doors open to the ocean, and I started hearing the waves crash in on the sand. And just listening to that sound, all I can tell you guys is that it was kind of like this ecstatic moment where I recognized something that I loved for the first time in my life, that nobody taught me to love, and that I bet I loved when I was 5, and I probably loved when I was 90. And it was the sound of that ocean, and it was being alone in my hotel room. And we're not supposed to love being alone, you know, because of community, and, you know, but I loved being alone. And then a few hours later, I just sat and listened. And then a few hours later, I went down and I got this big thing of tea with lemon. And I was walking on the beach thinking, I love beaches, being alone, and hot tea. Now, I realize that's not earth-shattering to you, but it was to me because I didn't know that about myself, right? And now I do. And what I know now is that if my career goes fantastically, I'll be happy. And if it doesn't, I know how to make myself happy. And if my family works out perfectly, I'll be happy. And if it doesn't, I know how to make myself happy. Because you'll find me on the beach, taking a walk with some tea and a good book, and probably my computer, because I love to write and incessantly check Facebook. But that is not my true love. So this is the rule about the thing that you find out about yourself that is you and not your roles. It has to be a thing that you love doing, just for the love of doing it, and not for the result of it, right? So, if you love cooking, if that's your thing, you have to love the cooking. You cannot love the cooking because people will appreciate you when you put the meal on the table, because we all know that they won't, right? And so if you love the writing, you have to love the process of it. Like, you would just, you'd do it even if you were gonna burn it afterwards. You know, it's like those monks that make those amazing mazes, and then they wipe it all off at the end, because it's about the process of doing it that brings you joy and peace. Because we can never put our joy and peace in other people's hands, right? We can't let our joy and peace hinge on the results of the things we're doing, because we can't control that. And so the writing has to be not to become this or that, not to get published, not to do this or that. It has to be the joy of the writing. And the running, I know there's some people that love running, okay? It has to be for whatever you guys get out of that. Like the, I don't know, run it, the something good. But not running a marathon, right? Because we can't control those things. The second thing that I think we would all do well as women to remember is that there is a rhythm. There's a rhythm of life and of productivity and creativity that is just a fact, like gravity is a fact, or like the waves go in and out in the ocean is a fact. It's just a cycle. And we women like to pretend there's not. The cycle is show up, be still, give, take, work, rest, right? We women want to ignore all the downtime and pretend that what we can just do forever is just give and just keep showing up and keep working without ever resting or taking that downtime. And I think what happens to us during those times, and what I've read over and over and over again from so many women, is that when we ignore that cycle, the same thing happens. It happens to the ocean when something messes with it. There's like a tsunami. You know, and those tsunamis for us, or those natural disasters for us, are health crisis and relationship crisis, or one of the worst crises for women, which is a total loss of connection with our intuition. Because one of the most amazing things about women is the ability we have to know. We know what to do next. We know what the right thing is for us. We know what that next right thing is if we take the time to get quiet enough to download it, or to do whatever it is that you do when you check in with yourself, right? I call it be still. That's my time. I have a friend who calls it receiving mode. So when she shuts everything down and she goes into receiving mode, right? She reads, she prays, she does whatever she needs to do to take it in. I actually got Be Still tattooed on my wrist because I forget it so often, and my daughter's 7 and she's a total rule follower, because in my house the way you rebel is you follow all the rules, because that's so different than me. But she said, why did you get that tattoo? And I said, you know, Be Still, it's just a really important thing to me, and I always forget it. And she said, well, you should just get a notebook. So, if you have trouble remembering to take that time and participate in that rhythm that is just the case. If we fight it, it's like fighting gravity. We have to have that in and out, then write it down, put it on the walls, remind yourself to rest, because it's an important part of being productive and creative. And what some people call that rhythm is balance, right? That's one of the most frequently asked questions that I get. How do I find the balance? And what people usually mean when they're talking about balance, I think, it's like life is this big pie, and as women, we just have to cut it up and give everybody the exact right piece of us, and then work, kids, friends, and then everyone will be happy, and we'll be happy, but that's not a thing, okay? Balance, to me, it's nerve-wracking because it makes me think like we have to stay still or we'll be out of balance, you know? And I think we can't find that perfect balance for the same reason that we can't find a unicorn. Okay, because the balance doesn't exist, right? It's not real. What can be real is we can find the rhythm of life, which is like the yin and yang. It's the tension of two things. You know, speaking of balance, I take yoga because yoga helps me remain calm. And what I've learned in yoga is that I'm really strong and really flexible, two things that I've really needed throughout my life. But I have no balance. Okay, I fall over all the time. It's a family joke in my family. You'll just be walking and then I'm gone. I'm down. Right? No obstacles, just I don't know what the deal is. And this really frustrates my yoga teacher to no end. Okay, because I live in Naples, Florida, so everyone in my yoga class is 90. But I am the one who's always falling down, okay? So she taught me, she said, Glennon, what you need to learn to balance. And I said, yeah. I know that. Everyone knows that, right? She said, what balance is it's the tension between two forces, two equal forces pushing on each other, right? That's what balance is. It's remaining in the tension between two opposing forces, which reminds me of one thing we say at Momastery all the time, which is let's be kind and brave. Because if we're kind without being brave, we're spineless. And if we're brave without being kind, we're heartless. But those two things together are a really strong, balanced platform to stand on, right? Or it reminds me of the sign that I have above my computer that says faith and sweat. Because my entire life is about doing some work, showing up in the morning to do my work and then letting it go, right? I will show up and I will put in my hours and then I'm gonna go have my life today. Not in 3 years, not in 5 years. I'm going to have my life today. Because how we spend our days is how we spend our lives, right? So if we're constantly saying, I will, I think that if we find the rhythm of life, we also have to find our rhythm. Because I think living authentically is not necessarily telling the truth all the time, because nobody does that. I think living authentically is living your days out aligned with your values, right? So if you value family, and you value friends, and you value yourself, and you value your work, and you value your community, then you plan your day that way. Because none of us can plan our life, right? That old saying, if you want to hear God laugh, tell her your plans, right? But we can plan our day. We can make sure we have time for all the things we value, and I think that's an authentic life. Because if we wait till it calms down, if we wait till our family's fine, if we wait till... I just have to wait till I find the balance. It's never gonna happen, right? The third thing that I think we all will face is criticism. And in all of the studies that go around about people's fears, public speaking and being criticized are the two things that women say they're most afraid of. And so, you know, the saying goes that if we want to avoid criticism, all we have to do is do nothing and say nothing and be nothing, right? Now, I just knowing you as a crowd, I don't think that's probably an option for most of you, which means that we will face criticism. We just will. And it's better to decide how we're going to face it beforehand, because when it happens, we're so devastated that we're not in our right minds, okay? So the first wonderful thing we can do, which took me 10 years of parenting and doing this writing and speaking thing to figure out, is that people making different decisions than we are, or having different values than we do, are not necessarily directly criticizing us with their lives. I'll tell you a story about that. Okay, so I find parenting to be extremely difficult on every level. I don't know why more people aren't crying all the time about how hard parenting is. Okay? My daughter last night, she says, I don't want you to go to work. And we don't do mommy guilt that way in my house. And I said, I'm going to do important things and you're fine. Your daddy and you will be just fine. And she said, you know, I just don't want you to go. I don't want you to go to work. And I thought, oh, that's so funny. She thinks when I leave, I'm going to work. No, honey, when I'm here, I'm working. So hard, right? So hard. Okay. You can have a therapy session about that later. But the thing about the criticism, okay, so we will face it. And I think that, you know, we have to decide. I was at this food court when my kids were little. And this was like the epitome of success for me, because I had made it out of the house with my two children and we were at a place. Okay? Right? Because usually, seriously, we make it in the car. And I'm like, I don't know how anyone also goes to a place. Because that is so hard, just to get them in the car, right? So we would just get in and then go back in. So my kids actually thought a field trip was just to get in the van and then you go back inside. So this time we had made it to the mall. And we ordered our little pizza, like our cardboard, well, they call it pizza, but it's like cardboard food court pizza. And I was cutting it up, feeling like an awesome mom. And this mother comes in with her daughter and sits down next to me at the table, next to me, okay? And her daughter is, first of all, she has an outfit on that matches each other, okay? Like a shirt that matches the skirt. And then she has braids in her hair. Okay, so this mother had gotten the daughter up and somehow braided her hair. To me, this is some sort of rocket science miracle, right? So then the mother pulls an avocado out of her purse and takes a knife and cuts the avocado and starts scooping avocado out of the avocado and feeds it to her daughter, who goes, and is eating the avocado, okay? Now, I can only explain to you what happened to me next. I was furious. I called my husband to tell him what this horrid woman was doing to me. And I told him she is parenting at me. Okay? And so after a long conversation, he said, Glenn, he's trying to talk me down, which is just always their mistake, you know? And he said, you know, do you think it's possible that she didn't even know you were going to be at the food court today? And so I think about that all the time, you know? Like when somebody gets a big book deal or somebody's doing better than me at work or somebody's doing some amazing parenting, like buying organic stuff or whatever, they are not parenting at me. And no one's being successful at me. And people who have different beliefs than I am, they're not believing at me, right? And people aren't being tall at me. And they don't have, perfect complexion at me. And they're not generally being calm and cool at me. And so that has eliminated 95% of what I used to perceive as criticism. But then there's the 5% that's real and that hurts, right? And so I will tell you that the way that I decided to deal with head-on criticism or cruelty, which happens on the interweb sometimes, is that I wasn't going to engage it. And I decided that before I ever started my blog. And I really do believe that my decision not to engage it has been why the blog's been successful. Because I am able to spend all of my energy on whatever's next, right? Because all we can do in life is do our best. And we will make mistakes. We will make mistakes, and we will not be perfect. And if we're always turning back to defend ourselves or explain ourselves or make excuses for ourselves or even apologize all the time, we don't have any energy for the next thing. You know, I think of it as like a tug of war. Like if I am constantly, I'm doing my work, and I leave each essay and each bit of work I do behind me. And if I constantly turn around and grab onto that rope where somebody else is pulling, I'm going to use all of my energy doing that instead of concentrating on what's next. But if I let go of that rope, first of all, the other person falls on their ass, which you can picture, and it's fun. And then you can turn around and do whatever's next. You know, somebody, I told that story in the last session, and somebody said, tell us a real story about criticism, which I thought was so funny. And I said, okay, when my marriage fell apart and everything was going down, okay, it was about a month before my book tour, okay? I was to go on the road to talk to women in 16 cities all over the country about my book, much of which is about the beauty of marriage. And parenting. And all of the things that were now gone, right? And so I was very depressed. And what you do when you're depressed is you Google yourself. No, don't ever do that, because I Googled myself. And I found these forums and forums of awful things that people were saying about me. And it was so horrible, I didn't even know they were out there. And they were saying, I called my sister that night, my sister's up here, I take her everywhere with me. And she said, and I said, sister, you're not gonna believe this. They're on the computer and they're saying horrible things. They're saying that I'm an addict, and they're saying that my marriage is falling apart, and they're saying that I am neurotic, and they're saying that my life's a mess, And they're saying, and my sister said, okay, but I think all of that is true. And so I hung up on her. But I thought about that for a while. And you know, I think sometimes we're so, it's in us to defend ourselves, right? And so the second somebody says something about us, we say, no, I'm not. Like little kids, right? You're blah, blah, blah. No, I'm not. And we don't even think, like, maybe I am those things, right? So I thought about it more, and I thought, you know what? All these people are doing right now is they're just proving my point. Because my whole point is, yes, that life is really, really messy. And that the best part of life, which is relationships, are always messy. And that I am a bit of a disaster quite often, honestly. And that I'm still showing up. That I'm a mess, and I'm messy, and things fall apart. And I, even in the midst of them falling apart, I can still show up and make a difference for other women. That's my point. And also, what I forgot about that story. I read neurotic so many times that I Googled it. And neurotic just means your brain is always spinning, and you think everything's your fault, and you can't sleep, and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh my God, yes, finally. Someone has defined me. I took it to my therapist. I said, this is what I am. And she said, I know. Helpful, 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 right? You know, we have these weaknesses that we perceive as weaknesses. They're never weaknesses. They are the things that we don't like about ourselves are always the things we can use to make better connections with other women. And the things that we wish were different about ourselves, those things you can only make better a little bit. Another thing my therapist told me. 20%. I don't know where they come up with these numbers. They probably just make them up. But we can only change ourselves like 20%, right? But the great thing is that our strengths, those are boundless. The things we're good at, we can concentrate on. We gotta, as women, we tend to stay in those little parts that we're not good at. You know, I am never not gonna be dramatic. I can fight that battle my whole life. I am never not gonna be dramatic. I'm probably never not gonna be neurotic. But I have all of these amazing strengths, and I'm just going to live there. And I think we just need to live in our strengths more. And the other thing that I think we should decide is I think we should be doing something, be engaged in something that is so important to us that we would never let ourselves off the hook just because of some criticism, right? Because it will try to take you down. Criticism is so painful to hear, and it hurts so bad, and that's okay. We can make it through that hurt. It will pass. But the way it passes is to know, is to have a mission statement or to have one sentence about what you're doing that is so important that when you lose perspective because of the criticism, you can go back to and say, that's right, that's what I'm doing. And for me, I can't let criticism take me out of the game because me showing up and telling my story, it's a life-saving strategy for me. Because as a recovering everything, keeping shame out of my life is number one priority for me. I have to wake up and tell my stories and tell the truth. Because when I get the messy, icky stuff that scares me out of the dark and out onto the computer and the paper, and thousands of women say, actually, me too, it makes me feel less afraid and it makes me braver. So I don't have a choice. I have to do it. The fourth thing is, we have to know how the hell our life works. And if we have a partner, we have to make sure they know how the hell our life works. And I will tell you the story about that. Before my marriage fell apart, we're back together now, so it's okay. But before my marriage fell apart, I would have told you that I was a fiercely capable and independent woman. Okay? When my marriage fell apart and we separated, I learned really fast that just because you make money and you spend money does not mean you understand money. And it is a very, very scary thing to be looking down the barrel of a life alone and not understand anything about your money. I didn't know where it was. I didn't know any of the passwords that protected it. I knew there was like some taxi person we went to every year, but I didn't know where he worked or lived. I didn't know anything. And that was terrifying. And then my car broke down. And I didn't know what to do about that. I called an air conditioning service to my house because I couldn't find the on button. Okay? And I remember one night, the emotions of dealing with a marriage crumbling were hard, but harder was the logistics of a marriage crumbling because I remember sitting on the couch and picking up the damn remote at the end of a very hard day and trying to turn on the TV, and I couldn't get the TV on. And I sat there staring at my remote that can't turn the TV on but could probably send a rocket to the moon, and thinking, I wonder how many fierce, smart, capable women have gotten back into crappy marriages just because they wanted to watch TV. And that's when I realized that in a house, the division of labor is good, but a division of knowledge is not good because it creates a power imbalance, right? Because the other part of that is that both sides fall on the woman, okay? Because I'm just telling you that this is the other thing that we noticed. And we had it divided down pretty traditional roles, except that I was also working, but whatever, not bitter. But things like when we were separated, Craig, Tish has a birthday party on Saturday at Johnny's house. Okay, well, what does that mean? Okay, just go get a gift. What? At one point I said, just put this stuff away in the closet, and he said, and this is a wonderful, capable, fantastic man, right? I don't know how the girl's closet works. Okay, guys, it's a box, right? This is not like a Jetsons closet, okay? We had divided up the knowledge in our house so much that not only did I not know what I was doing in his areas, but he didn't know what to do in my areas, which doubled my work, because I was worried all the time that he was gonna miss something or mess something up, and I had to leave 7-page manifestos every time I left for 2 days to tell, like, where the socks are, and, you know, all the things. And so I learned after we got back together that the first thing we were gonna do is teach each other how we do the things we do and how our lives work. And now Craig knows the social schedule, he knows where the toy aisle is in Target, he knows what's age appropriate for a girl and a boy at Target. He knows how the closet works. He can do all of that. So when I leave the house, this is what I do before this morning. Bye. And it's all good, right? Because both of us know how our lives work. Okay, what am I on, five already? Okay, five, okay. These are the three people, the three women in your life that if you don't have in your life, you need to get in your life stat. The first one is a good therapist, okay? If you don't have time for a therapist right now, just get some books from good therapists. But I believe in therapists, in therapy so much because I think that we spend a lot of time figuring out how things work, like, you know, our car, but we don't know how brains work. And my time with my therapist has been unbelievably important to me because, first of all, she likes me, but she doesn't love me, okay? So she's not terrified about everything I'm gonna do, like my mom, you know? Like, if I tell my mom I'm cutting bangs, she's like up all night because of the terror. You're gonna be upset about your bangs. Or she's not my dad, right, who is freaking out every time I tell another story, like on the interwebs. Jesus, really, again, Glennon, can't you take anything to the grave? He's always saying. Because what I do is not a direct reflection on my therapist, right? So she can tell me the truth. And also, she can call me on my BS because I'm paying her to do so. And she is a professional. So, like, for example, I was freaking out recently because there was too much going on, right? I was losing my balance. And so I went in and I said, I have all these speeches and I'm freaking out. I don't know what to do. And she said, well, let's talk about your process, which to me is like so hilarious, like as if there's a process, right? There should be, okay? And she said, tell me how you're preparing. And I said, well, I'm a writer, I'm an artist, and I have a lot of faith. So what I do is I do some, you know, I do a little bit of work and then I just, you know, I just wait for it to come, and I'm convinced that when I show up that the right words will just come out of my mouth. And she said, okay, well, that's bullshit. And she taught me these, like, I found, okay, if my husband would have said that, oh my God, he would have seen us on the news, right? But from her, I am paying her to know that and to say, I found myself going to Target. I have binders now with organized binders that are different colors that I'm going to make a process out of. Now, there's nothing in them yet, but baby steps, she says, right? The other person you need in your life is someone who is doing what you dream of doing, but is ahead of you on that path. Because the beautiful thing about being a woman and being a leader and being engaged with other women is that it's really just like joining this procession, this beautiful, amazing, world-changing procession of women, and there have been tons of them that have come before us, and there will be tons of them that have come behind us, and the road that we are walking has been paved by a million glorious warriors ahead of us. And so we think that when we're setting out into the world that we are trailblazing, but we're not. We're not. And we think that the problems that come to us, or the challenges that come to us, are unique to us, and they're not. And so what we need is somebody that we trust that we can call and say, look, what do I do here? I'm being criticized. What do I do here? And that will show us another way. And the other person that we need is somebody that's just jumped into that procession, but that's behind us. Because I learned this from teaching. Well, I learned this, the first one I learned from AA, which is that you don't get to keep anything that you don't give away. And the second thing I learned is that you don't know if you know something until you have to teach it. I have learned so many times that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about when I start talking. Bad thing for a speaker, which is why you need a process, back to therapy. But you really find out what you've mastered when you can explain it to another person. And you know what? That's when you realize that you're part of something amazing. It's when you realize you think you're alone, and then you look up at the woman in front of you and the woman behind you, and you realize you're not alone at all. That there are women all over the world marching the same march that you've marched. Ones that you can get help from and wisdom, and ones that you can offer wisdom. And they're actually part of this beautiful chain. And that makes you feel brave and less lonely. That's what I have for you today. We're going to do some questions now. Usually what happens with questions is that there's this very awkward few seconds where nobody asks any. So we can do that. It's fine. Or you could just ask some. Okay, we'll do the thing. Yes? Yes.
And you got pregnant and all of a sudden you weren't.
Yeah. Well, no. Okay. So the question is,
yeah,
you need to get the book Carry On Warrior. So she said, so you were an addict and you were recovering everything, and then all of a sudden you were pregnant and you weren't. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I still think of myself as an addict. Being a recovering everything is my favorite part of myself. Because I feel like what led me into addiction is this very sensitive soul that I have, and all I had to do was learn to use that for good. I'm still exactly the same person that I was when I was 8 years old and became bulimic. And I'm still exactly the same person that I was when I went to college and became an alcoholic. It's just that I didn't know that it was okay to be lonely and angry and afraid all the time. I thought it meant that there was something really wrong with me, and so I needed to hide. And that's what addiction is. It's just a hiding place, right? It's a place where you hide so you don't have to show anybody your real self. You know, my story is dramatic, and addiction is dramatic, but everybody has hiding places. Perfectionism is a huge hiding place. It's a place where we can go when we don't want to admit how messy we are, and we don't want to deal with how messy other people are. Snarkiness, unkindness, you know. Feelings are so hard to bear. And one of my favorite sayings is by this Buddhist monk who I love, and she says that if we can sit with hot loneliness for 1.6 seconds, when yesterday we could only sit with it for 1 second, that is the journey of the warrior. And all that means is most of the things that we do that are destructive to us and destructive to other people, we do because we can't handle pain. Because as soon as we feel lonely or angry, we feel like we need to numb it away with food or booze or drugs or shoe shopping, whatever it is, right? Whatever our coping mechanism is. And so, yes, I was an addict, and I am an addict, and I'm a really sensitive person. And so my warrior journey is to figure out how to use, I'm still lonely and fearful and angry every single day. And so now I just have to figure out how to sit with it and let it pass, and then use my loneliness to forge connections with other women, and use my pain to compel me to help other people in pain. That's how the nonprofit started. So many good things can come from our uncomfortable emotions. If we don't hide, and we don't run, and we don't numb, and we don't lash out at other people. Yes. Yeah, okay, so any identifying ourselves outside of the roles. I don't know, I mean, some people talk about going back to your childhood and figuring out what you loved as a kid. I know I have a friend who, horses are her love. She's a mother of three, a struggling mother of three. She has a very busy career and husband and a lot of things going on, and she is at that stable. Like, come hell or high water and everybody tantruming on the floor, she's at the stable on Saturday mornings. You know, I don't know. I think it's that one thing. And I also think that if you are someone that has children under the age of five, you should forget this for a while. Because I would have been so angry with anyone who told me to find myself. Like, any time more than six months ago, my youngest turned five, and things are a little bit different now. Before then, just it's survival mode, okay? So this is not for you. You don't have to find yourself. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's weak. I think that, listen, this is what I promise you. This is why I never give advice, because my only advice is get still. You know the answer. You just have to find that time to let it be downloaded to you. Yes. Okay, so the question was, how did that role switching work, and did we really switch roles, and how did that happen with the jobs? Okay, so no, we didn't really switch roles. And I should have said this. I still don't know how the car works, okay? I still don't know, I know more about money, but not a ton. But this is what I do know. I have a piece of paper that has the names of all of the people who do know that stuff, right? So I have the same access to the money people as my husband does. And I have a direct access to the air conditioning man. And I know that my son knows how to use that remote, even when he tells me he doesn't want to help me again. So, no, we didn't switch roles. And that's why, I mean, if I'm telling you the truth, I would tell you that he took on more of my roles while I sort of stayed the same. With children under the age of five? Yeah. Look, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm telling you, having very, very small children is, it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, okay? There is an element of completely and totally cutting yourself a break. I mean, do you have children under the age of five? You're dressed. You have earrings on. You are doing an amazing job. I mean, really, I did not get dressed for years. And I was fiercely protective of myself. I gave myself every break in the world, you know? And I feel like being really bad at parenting sometimes is a parenting strategy. Because my son told me one time, that he knows that he never has to be perfect because I taught him through example. Okay? Because really this perfectionism, it's like people are like, well, I'm not perfect, but. I mean, of course you're not perfect, you're a human being. It's like saying, well, I'm not a Volkswagen, but. I mean, perfection is not a real thing. And it's like this disease that we have that keeps people separate from each other. And what we want more desperately than anything is real connection with other people. But for some reason, we think if we act perfect, that will make us friends. And it doesn't. Because all it does is make people uncomfortable since they can sense it's not real. And so when we let that perfection thing go and just, you know, we say the things in the back of our head that we're thinking when we're actually saying other things. Like instead of saying, I hate that girl too, saying, I'm really lonely. Or like that, what you just said, like, yeah, kids under the age of 5. Everybody knew what you meant, right? Yeah, I mean, I think that like the things that are the best in life, like having little kids, are also the things that are hardest in life. Like a great relationship is also excruciatingly difficult, right? We call, in the book, in Carry On Warrior and Momastery, we say that life is brutal, but life is also beautiful. And we call it brutiful. That all the best things are also the worst things. And, you know, the thing about parenting is that it's love, and love is the hardest thing on earth. And the reason why you don't think that crying about how hard it is love is because we have the wrong idea about love, and we think that love is cotton candy and cushy and soft and smiley and pink, and it's not. It's crying, and it's showing up day after day for the messy people in our lives who drive us insane. And it's love is just a dogged and fierce determination to keep showing up for the messy people in your life. And to know that the worst times will pass and the best times will pass. And that because it's supposed to be hard, you're doing the hardest thing on earth and it's supposed to be hard. And you're not doing anything wrong. And you just need to get in that procession with the rest of us who woke up crying for years and years. Or I shouldn't even say woke up, should I? Because we were already awake. I have a child who still comes into my room to report to me her dreams. Okay? Like every 2 hours. I had another dream about a panda bear. You know, that, okay, I know, I have like 1 minute. That's why I named the book Carry On Warrior. You know why? Because I had this friend who was in the military, and he was one of these like special forces people, right? And he said he had done all this training, and he had to go through this like torture training, okay? So they torture them, because that's lovely, and they torture them at different levels. And do you know what the ultimate torture was? What they had to do? They had to sit in a room with a screaming baby coming over the loudspeaker saying, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." They're like ultimate gold medal hero warrior. And I'm like, you get a freaking medal? I got Prozac. I mean, the reason that you feel like you're being tortured is because you are actually being tortured. Okay? That's all. That's what I have. Come see me. Love you so much. Thank you for being here.